Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Sort of an overcast, cooler type day. But I do believe if we don't get any rain today, it doesn't look like there's much rain in the forecast for the next week and a half or so. So, you know, I wouldn't mind if it rained a little bit today. But welcome in to the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, the 247 Network, here in the studio with Drew at the controls. And we'd love for you to join in. Jason, Back from that trip out to College Station and getting ready. This is the gauntlet that Auburn has to run here. This 3 or 4 game stretch here.
Yeah, I mean, you look and obviously, started with Texas A&M. Started there. I mean, you think that, you know, that was kind of the issue. And which opponents are the most talented that you're going to face?
These are three of the four most talented that Auburn's going to face all year in a row.
I had the schedule divided up four. Well, I guess it was four, but more 3-6-3 almost for me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had Texas A&M was kind of in that next group, but like you got the three non-conference games other than Cal. You go, okay, you should chalk those up as wins. Had Cal in the next six group. Had A&M in that group too, which you go, those are games that if you do what you're supposed to do, you're going to have a chance to win.
Right. And Auburn had opportunities
That would have been the case.
Yes.
Had you not had the penalties, had you not missed some receivers.
Mistakes.
Had
some
receivers ran the right route or had done the things they're supposed to. You might have had a couple plays there. You had a chance. And you still, hey, you're still throwing into the end zone in the third quarter or in the fourth quarter. Early in the fourth, right?
Yeah, fourth to try to cut it to one score.
Yeah, cut it to 3 points. So you had that in that game.
You're moving the ball down 10 late in the third, which doesn't feel.
You have the fade to Hooks in the end zone.
There were multiple times when it felt like the score didn't match what you'd seen on the field, right? Because I thought A&M maybe left
back and forth.
Yeah, back and forth. Like A&M
early on
for A&M to only be up
6-0,
right? As late as they were in a game they'd controlled.
They dominated.
I'm
early.
Looking at the end of the first quarter. You're going, man, Auburn's really lucky. It's not 14-0,
right?
And then you go, okay, at halftime, Auburn should be leading this game
14-0 plus the 7 they took off the board because the shovel pass or the toss was called an incomplete pass instead of a fumble score. It's a totally different football game at 13-0.
Yeah, I just
there.
Think there's two of those opportunities.
Yeah.
If Auburn had not just gone and picked up the football late in the game, they end up scoring anyway.
I do wonder if A&M rearranged their game plan in the second half offensively,
no
thinking, okay, Auburn's not going to be able to score. Let's throttle back.
No, I don't think that. I think they rearranged it to take advantage of a quarterback who doesn't make mistakes, who gets the ball out of his hands pretty quickly. Honestly, Connor Wegman is out for the year. Unfortunate for him.
Right.
I honestly think that it makes Texas A&M a better football team.
Well, I mean, look, he was the guy last year, and he got hurt. I guess it was against Arkansas, who they've got now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's getting that second opportunity. Max Johnson, for his career, has thrown 42 touchdowns and 7 interceptions.
I'm telling you, I've said the whole time.
I like the guy.
He's one of the top five quarterbacks in this league and hasn't been a full-time starter anywhere he's been. And I think that guy's
the most puzzling decision, I thought, of the Jimbo tenure was to not go with Max last year and to play those games with – who was the other guy, Hudson?
He's Georgia Tech's starting quarterback now.
Yeah.
Haynes King.
Haynes King. I remember thinking nothing against Haynes King.
I mean, that's three talented quarterbacks.
Yeah.
A bunch of talented receivers.
And Calzada was in that room, too. I think Calzada's starting at Incarnate Word
this year. But I left Saturday's game going – that's a really talented roster, but that's still not a special football team.
No, they're not. I agree.
And so, you know, you look at it from an Auburn perspective, getting back to kind of what we saw, and I saw mistakes, and this team is not good enough to do that. We talked about that before the year. This team, you now have a roster that gives you a chance to compete, but it gives you a chance to compete if you don't make those mistakes and shoot yourself in the foot.
You're right. You can't beat yourself.
Yeah, and a couple of those were, I think, horrendous calls, by the way. I think Brian Batty's run where they called DeHunter Britton for a hold was absolutely horrendous. That would have been first down at the 18-yard line.
I was convinced that they got the number wrong and there was a hold I didn't see by somebody else because they replayed the Gunner Britton play on top of it.
I'm just telling you, I was in the end zone, Auburn facing me, and the run goes to the right from Auburn's formation to my left. He tackles him. He gets tackled on the ground, and the umpire walks up and drops his flag from his hip. After the tackle's made, the holding call was at the line of scrimmage. It was 3 or 4 seconds after the quote-unquote hold occurred. He walks up and drops the flag. And, like, hey, I have no problem with you making a call, but make it when it happens. And the problem I do have is assuming – if you assume a call – well, that had to be holding because it looked funny. Don't make a call unless you see it. That's all I ask. And to me, I thought a couple of those, and those are huge plays in a game.
Wait, so he's behind the defender looking at it, or he's
He is behind the defender. That's who made the holding call. Yeah, he is on this side. He is between me and the line of scrimmage.
Okay.
He walks up and drops his flag.
The hands are on the front.
Yes.
Right, on the other side.
Yeah, and so, those were huge plays.
You understand why I asked that question, right, Bill?
Huge plays in the game. Auburn did not play well. You combine those two things, and you don't give yourself a great chance to win football games against almost anybody left on the schedule. Vandy, New Mexico State. Other than that, nobody left.
You can't play like that. Can't play like that and expect to win.
This team can't overcome those things.
The question – do we have a call?
Yeah, we do.
I have a question for Jason. I've been sort of saving him. We've had people talk. So quarterback's been so much. We'll get to the caller in just a sec. But like you saw the game. Sounds like they're going with Peyton Thorne. What concerns you the most about what you saw from the Auburn offense, and what seems fixable even if you stick with Peyton Thorne from what you've seen from the Auburn offense?
Yeah, so we were talking a little bit before we came on the air. I said the thing you have to figure out, and Hugh Freeze said it today, said, we got to coach him better. I think it starts with, okay, what's our plan in terms of the passing game? And it looked to me, it looks like a quarterback who hasn't – we know he grasped the offense. I was just listening to –
but he hasn't run
correct.
The offense.
I was just listening to Ryder Cup
Radio.
And they're talking about Scottie Scheffler. You know, I'm a golf guy. Scottie Scheffler has changed his putting style. He's been a terrible putter for the last half of the year. Changed his putting style and said, look, you can work on those things all you want to in practice, but when you get under pressure, what happens? That's the difference.
You've got to do them and do them and do them until that's
the difference in these two games we've seen. The two games against Power 5 teams versus the two games against non-Power 5 teams has been pressure, speed. It speeds you up. He looks sped up in these games.
He does. He looks very uncomfortable.
And to me, that is, okay, let's simplify what we're doing and execute what we're doing. So it won't be a surprise to me to see simplification. Let's execute it. And the other thing I keep coming back to is you got to design plays to get your best players the ball. Jay Fair had 2 targets. If he's one of your best guys.
Javarius had 1, didn't he?
Yeah, he had 1. And Rivaldo had a couple.
Yep.
But they were at the line of scrimmage. Some of that was because of protection issues, which is part of the job of the quarterback too. So there's some things that, to me, I look and see is you had a guy that didn't go through spring practice. And he's now in an offense that he's now played for 4 games. You can do all the preseason practice you want to, but it's not like preseason football in the NFL where you're playing an opponent. You're scripting what you're doing in a scrimmage. The defense is scripting what they're doing in a scrimmage. And you see the kind of the same thing. When you get in the game, you got to adjust, and they're doing stuff you might not have seen before. And that, it looks to me like he's been sped up. Can he slow down Saturday? We'll see. But –
Well, that's a
if it doesn't slow down in a hurry, then I think you start going, okay, now what do we need to do to be successful?
Well, you've got an open date. You've got an open date after this, so there's an opportunity as Hugh said, reassess.
Yeah, correct. So it's not going to slow down from a defensive perspective on the other side.
No.
Because Georgia has many guys, but A&M has dudes on defense.
They do.
They have those guys. Georgia has given up. I mean, you look at it and go, they're still, top 20 defense in the country. They're still really good. This is not a Georgia defense that we've seen the last 2 years. It is not that group of guys. It's still good.
No, it's very, very talented.
It's still good, it is not the guys that we've seen the last couple of years. There's going to be some opportunities for Auburn on Saturday, but we'll come back to that one thing. You got one-on-one shots. You got to make those plays. Mm-hmm. And Saturday they had, whether it was overthrows, a late throw, guys not going up and getting the ball. Cannon Brown had one over the middle that he let get into his body too much and they knocked out. Shane Hooks didn't make a play on one in the end zone. If you're Auburn, you got to make at least half of those plays to give yourself a chance to pass a game.
That's Jason Caldwell, who's with us here in hour number one. Let's go ahead and get to the phone, 334-321-1390. And Dak is up first. Hey, Dak.
Hey, guys. Good to hear from you. Jason, I got a question for you. If Bobby Petrino is not on that staff and Jimbo Fisher is calling plays, do we win that ball game?
It's probably a
better chance.
It's probably a 10-7 game.
Yeah. I think we would win that game.
Yeah, I thought there were a couple of things that, especially when they go to a second quarterback, those first couple of possessions were really good adjustment possessions, especially with a new quarterback in the game. And some of that too came from, and Hugh Freeze talked about it. You're down to your third safety and second or third nickel, and all it takes is one play. But they took advantage of one play in a couple of situations.
You're still talking about an Auburn offense that scored 3 points in the game, though, and an A&M offense that probably throttled down after going up 20-3. Like at that point, I don't know how many more times they. I mean,
they went from 6-20 by not throttling down.
That's right. But once they made it 20, I mean, I wonder if they could have scored more than 27 if they thought Auburn's
maybe
offense was going to be more of a threat. But up 20-3, I wonder if they started to play ball control.
But
even that bit them because they fumbled the.
Yeah,
the,
but
the
you run. Know they went three and out a couple times and they tried to throw the ball. Auburn got a little pressure on them doing that too. So yeah, I think Petrino did a good job, but they didn't have much success running the football other than one play. And, one play against the entire defense. They weren't able to run and establish a run very much against Auburn. And so he had to do some design things. They did a couple of the crossers and some of those things that Petrino does well. So, yeah, look at them Saturday. The Texas A&M Arkansas is now a really interesting game. Does Arkansas look like the team that played in the second half in Baton Rouge the other day? Or they look like the team that struggled with Kent State? There's still so many questions.
Rocket Sanders comes back. That's going to be a fun game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
I think that one of the more amazing stats about Auburn A&M was A&M outgained Auburn 402-200. First downs were just 16-14.
Right.
They had some
big plays.
That's it. And Auburn could not get any of those plays.
What was Auburn's longest?
Well, you got to have chunk yardage. You got to have chunk yardage plays. And
might have been the Jarquez draw for 15.
May have been.
Yeah, it wasn't much more than that. Might have had a pass play at some point, but yeah, no, you're right. Petrino was a big part of that for an offense that didn't get a whole lot going other than a couple of plays.
If the McConkey is going to get to play this weekend or not?
They're saying that he's starting to practice a little bit, and I got a feeling you're going to see him there on the sidelines. Whether or not he plays, we'll see.
I think that's huge. If he plays, that it'll be a tremendous challenge to beat him. But if he don't play, I think we got a shot to beat him. I said last week that out of these next three games, A&M, Georgia, and LSU, Georgia is the best chance of getting a win in those three games. Number one, because it's at home.
Yeah, I think.
Number two, think about the last 2 years we've played them. If we don't turn the ball over before half, we have a chance. And I don't think this team, Georgia's team, is better than the last two Georgia teams.
I don't either. I don't think they're better than the last two. Here's the key for me. The last couple of times Auburn's played Georgia, especially at home, it's been 7-3, something like that. Yeah. And Auburn's kind of hung around. To have a chance to win the game, you needed to do what South Carolina did.
Yeah.
You need to be 14-30.
That's right.
You need to score and take advantage of those early opportunities because they get less and less, especially in the second half of games, because you can run some clock in a hurry and get things down. That's what Georgia wants to do if they can. They're not running the ball as good. They've had a bunch of injuries in the running game. I agree. I think this is probably the most winnable of these three games. But you're
some,
right.
Some people would think you're just crazy, you know, saying that. But right. I don't know that I disagree.
You said, Dak, you were talking about Auburn having a chance. The last two games at home is what you talked about. Because last
last week, I'm talking about from last week, I said, our next three games was A&M, Georgia, and LSU.
I know that. No, Dak, what I'm saying is you were talking about the last two Georgia games and Auburn being starting close.
Yes.
Are you including last season?
Yes.
Yeah, it was until Auburn faked a punt last year.
Right.
They faked
the punt from our own side of the field.
Was 3-0 in the second quarter.
Yeah.
That's right. At halftime, I don't think Georgia would have scored if we hadn't done that fake punt.
If Auburn punts the ball right there, Georgia, it's probably 3-0.
Georgia pulls away in the second. I think it's still 14-0 pretty early
killed us when we did that.
Yeah, no.
Broke our bag when that happened.
You got to get ahead and build a lead. Is for me. I think you got to give yourself a little bit of a cushion and put pressure on a guy who has not played on the road. That's the key to this one. Can Auburn make Carson Beck go out and try to win a game on the road away from home for the first time?
Because I absolutely think the last two Auburn games at home, 21 and 19, were both games where Auburn. Even in that one, the 21 game or the 19 game is the one where. You have the 21-0 Georgia lead, and then Auburn comes back and nearly ties it at the end. And then the 21 game starts very close, and Georgia eventually starts to pull away. Last season, I think, starts kind of the same way, but Georgia starts to pull away a little bit earlier. I'm blanking on the specifics of last year's game, but I do remember it being 14 early, the lead. Yeah, like Auburn
it was no score after the first quarter.
Okay.
Georgia did not score after the first quarter. Let's see. And that was quite a few possessions. The second quarter. They started with the ball at the Auburn. Let's see. The Auburn faked a punt on their own 34-yard line, got tackled for 2-yard loss. Georgia started to drive on its own on Auburn 36-yard line. And then they scored to open the second quarter.
And the fake punt, and we appreciate the phone call, Dak. Great stuff. The fake punt is an interesting one, too, because, and I know we got to take a break, but last year, Auburn, I thought, was maybe too aggressive at times on fourth down. There were some decisions to go for it where trusting your defense and punting it might have been the move. There was a decision to fake a punt early in that Georgia game that you're talking about. If anything, I would have liked on Saturday against A&M, Jason. I thought that maybe the 4th-and-4 was an opportunity to go for it in the Auburn A&M game, and Auburn decided to lean on it and be a little bit more conservative. Defense is playing well, but I thought that was maybe the first time I've second guessed a Hugh Freeze 4th-down decision this season.
I think the style of game, because it reminded me of like Auburn at Penn State a couple of years ago. Where you're on the road, where you're like, hey, we're here. Let's don't mess up and give somebody a short field. Defense is playing good. And, okay, you punt the ball back. If you do that at Penn State in the first half 2 years ago in Happy Valley and then don't have a turnover there early in the second half, who knows what happens. But, yeah, there's some opportunities, and I think there'll be some of those. But, yeah, last year until the until their Georgia's touchdown, they ran 8-14 plays for 57 yards in their first three possessions. You fake a punt on your own end and give up a short touchdown, and then their second touchdown is 31 yards after turnover. So Georgia's first two touchdown drives were 10 plays, 67 yards. It took them 7 plays and a penalty to score from the 36 last year in the first half. And then they just ran over Auburn in the second half of the run game.
And another game where a little bit like A&M, maybe even more, that had Auburn posed more of a threat offensively, we might have seen the game plan from the other team change. But once they felt like, oh, we're up 14 and it's safe.
Yeah, well, they opened it up. Yeah, correct. And Auburn was not going to be able to threaten a whole lot. And yeah, that, this one comes down to me, can you make plays in the passing game? Because you're
going to have to.
You're not going
to
line up and just run the ball against Georgia.
I mean, no, they're going to play man, and they're going to say we're going to stop the run.
Yeah, I dare you. And then they're aggressive. Their safeties are aggressive. And they're going to – I'm guessing after watching Texas A&M, they're going to bring guys from all over the place. Can Auburn pick up the blitz? And then can you force Carson Beck to beat you and make Georgia struggle to run the football? Auburn's done a good job of that so far. If you let Georgia run it, it's over with.
And Georgia did – I know we got to take a break. Georgia did they did not have any points after the first three drives of the game last season. So if Auburn had been able to make hay with their possessions
– let's see. If you can do that at home and take a lead and all of a sudden go, okay, you know, you're Georgia at halftime 2 weeks ago at home against South Carolina, you're going, okay, hey, we're at home, we're okay. If you do something like that and you're on the road against a crowd, environment, all those things, all of a sudden it puts a little bit more pressure on you.
Let's get to our first break of the afternoon. Brett, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive. This Wednesday afternoon, Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, and Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. Heard Bruce Pearl's press conference, and he was talking about Chaney Johnson was battling Jalen Williams for the power forward position, but isn't he going to play a good bit of small forward, too? I thought it was more – I mean, I know he's an excellent athlete, can jump real well, but I thought it would be more of a small forward being able to handle the ball and his height.
Yeah, he can do some of that, but with Chris Moore being back healthy, especially, and you brought in Chad Baker Mazzara, and you still got Lior that can do some of that stuff too. Yeah, he'll be more of a power forward, especially now he's gained about 15 pounds, so he's a lot bigger and more physical than he was. So, yeah, he'll be more of a true four for them. He got the ability to play three in a pinch probably, but you know, he's your only other four at this point.
We've speculated about both Jalen or Chaney playing the three, but it sounds like Bruce really likes what they bring to the front court as athletic, fast fours that are going to cause matchup problems for the other team. I would add to the list of guys potentially at the three. Jason, what about if they like what Trey and Aiden can do together? What about Denver Jones possibly playing the three alongside those two guys on the floor at guard?
Yeah, I think in a pinch you could do that, but you don't want to have both your point guards playing those minutes and getting worn out at the same time probably. And so I think you'll see
– or KD could be in the guard.
Yeah,
could be playing guard
you've got
too.
Some you got options. But, yeah, I think especially now for them, I think after they saw Chaney during the summer, I think they felt like, hey, we need a little bit more strength and power, and he fits more what we want to do at the four, especially – after they got in Chad, you know, this summer too.
Yeah, but isn't he? He's pretty light.
Yeah, he's pretty long though.
Yeah, he is. I know he can shoot it.
Yeah,
but Moore, with his injuries, he hadn't been able to practice.
He's back.
So, I mean, I don't see where he's going to improve so much or that much, if any.
Yeah, he's back.
Been able to put the time in.
Yeah, he's back and going now, and so he'll have some, you know, chance to get back out there and get going. Looked fine yesterday, and so I think I think he'll be good. And
I think Chris had surgery like the week after Auburn was eliminated.
Yeah,
from the basketball
he was out in the spring and has been back probably late summer now. So he's been out there, but he was full go when we were out there yesterday.
Shoulders are tricky, but that's good to hear that Chris Moore is able to participate right now in practice. Now, as far as him improving, oh, and by the way, what about how do you say Scott's first name?
Adarin Scott.
Would he also be
he's more
a project?
He's going to be more of a five. But, okay. Bruce said yesterday, look, he's a guy that probably going to may play a reserve role, but he'll be behind Janai and Dylan at that five spot. Could probably slide in and maybe help at the four. But I think for him it's probably, hey, a year to get used to this system, get bigger, get stronger, especially since he wasn't here all summer.
Yeah, hey, last thing – this wasn't hearsay. I had a friend of mine who actually spoke with Bruce Pearl on the phone, and Pearl said he thinks this is the best shooting team he's ever had.
I think it has the potential to be that way for sure.
Have more guys that can shoot it and shoot it well.
That Final Four team could shoot.
Yeah. You had such a prolific guy in Bryce Brown,
mm-hmm.
and that was the thing. Denver Jones has the ability to be that guy, and he's a bigger bodied guy.
I'll take an improvement over the last couple of years. Forget about comparing it to the earlier Bruce Pearl.
I would sure hope that
Trey Donaldson's gotten better. Aiden Holloway can flat out shoot it. Him and Denver Jones are both guys that can really shoot it.
What did Bruce say Tuesday? He has it. He's got a little bit of it.
Yeah, and so I think.
Jason?
Yeah.
I've been going up there since 69 watching them play, and I think Holloway's got the best shot coming in as a freshman. I know Jabari had a great one, but Holloway gets it off very quick.
He reminds me, it's a different form, but he reminds me of a guy like Ronnie Battle. Ronnie Battle wasn't the biggest guy, but you knew as soon as he shot the ball, like, oh, that's got a chance to go in. He kind of reminds me of a guy like that, more athletic version than Ronnie Battle was. But those guys, yeah, it's hard to find a guy like that, especially his range. You're right, get the ball, get a shot off really quick. He's going to be fun to watch, and Trey Donaldson's gotten better too, different types of guys.
Appreciate the call, Brett. We'll get to Yellowhammer before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Well, anyway, I called in Monday when I was all distressed because we gave up 7 sacks in a lot of hurries, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, we don't have the time to run on a passing offense. You pointed out, though, and you know me, so you said don't blame it all on the offensive line, and you're right. There's receivers who are dropping the ball, not running their route right, and all that kind of stuff. But you pointed out there was situations where there were 7-on-5, and we'll certainly see some more 7-on-5, and it makes me think, well, okay, you've got to be able to respond to that. You've got to have a quarterback who can audible. I don't know if we're allowed to audible, but you've got to be able to anticipate it or at least have a safety valve. I remember the Miami Dolphins had one of their leading receivers one time was the tailback. They kept dumping off there. Remember Joe Burrow at LSU? He would dump off to the tailback. You got to have some way to give that quarterback some relief because the time is compressed. Probably we got such a soft opening that they weren't realizing, or the quarterbacks weren't realizing that things are going to be happening a lot quicker. But what do we do?
Yeah, no, I do think one of the things you just talked about is something that I've been looking for a little more. We saw a little bit to Brian Batty the other day, but I think this running back group has to become a much bigger part of the passing game. It's an extension of the handoff. We talked about that last week, something they could do. They did a little bit against Texas A&M. I think it needs to be more of this offense, especially when you're struggling to get the ball down the field. I mentioned about Jay Fair. Who are the guys you need to get touches for in this offense? And you look, okay, Jay Fair's one. Rivaldo Fairweather's one. Brian Batty is absolutely one of those guys now after seeing what he did at Texas A&M the other day. Jeremiah Cobb, Jarquez Hunter. Some of these guys are your running backs. So figure out ways to get touches for them in the passing game and find mismatches. I thought we saw it Saturday. Talking about Bobby Petrino. You know, Auburn loses safety, puts a new guy in, and what do? They attack the freshman and the new safety on that side. Auburn's got there's not many of those guys to go target at Georgia, but if you feel like, hey, this is our best matchup on the field, then that may be let's take advantage of that matchup. So I think you're right. I think passing game, running backs, 10 or 12 maybe Saturday, going, look, let's complete some passes. 6 yards. 6 yards would be a hugely positive play.
Oh, no kidding.
And I think
that'd
if you start thinking
give me,
about –
Yeah, give me 5 a play and
thinking about
I'm
some
happy.
Of those things. And there's nothing better at slowing down a pass rush than swing the ball out to a running back. You know, and you mentioned 7-on-5. That's the other part of this thing. You mentioned – Hugh Freeze said today, look, Peyton Thorne has absolute autonomy to change the play, to do those things at the line of scrimmage. Part of that is they got to get better as a quarterback and an offensive line at blitz pickup, communication. And there were a couple of times when you walk up and you see
– There was one play in particular.
You see where you look and Dylan Wade points out a guy.
Yeah, and the receiver does too.
And they were pointing out a guy, which means, hey, this guy's yours. Quarterback. Sometimes a quarterback has to take care of one guy. If there's going to be
the more I watch, the more I watch that play, and I know we got to take a break again. But the more I watch that play, I'm convinced that Peyton Thorne decided, well, this is an inside run. Because it was supposed to be. I think they were supposed to show whatever the screen with the running back running the swing pass route and everybody going out to block for him. They were going to show that and then quickly turn it into a quarterback draw up the middle. And I think Peyton Thorne thought he could beat that A&M player.
Just get him to the spot.
To the spot, and he did not beat the A&M player to that spot. Like that's one where.
Yeah. But that would explain it. I mean, thinking the guy's going to over-pursue and you're going to have him run right by you.
Because if that's a pass that requires any time at all, I mean, it wasn't going to happen. It's barbecue.
And that's the thing. That's where, you know, you mentioned Yellowhammer's talking about. That's where, as an offense, then you look and go, okay, that means we abort that play. And we do something quick to the blitzer side. Mm-hmm. Those are things that it's hard to do when you're still learning the ins and outs of an offense.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. One more segment with Jason. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390 as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 22 minutes away from 5 o'clock, and let's get right back to the phone. And Spectre is next. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. Wednesday is usually my day to not talk about the previous game. So I'm going to do this. Did y'all happen to read the article in Auburn Undercover by Nathan King?
I've read quite a few.
Which one? Is it the one about the biggest upsets, the point spreads?
Well, it's the one concerning Peyton Thorne.
The one from today where Freeze talked about him from –
Or maybe the one where Nathan analyzed every Peyton Thorne play and sort of assigned some blame. Is that it? I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well, anyway, let me read what I'm concerned with here. I'll just read it at word for word what it says. It says, on one occasion, both left tackle Dylan Wade and slot receiver Jay Fair pointed out a free rusher before the play. Mm-hmm. But no changes were made by Thorne. It was a 2-yard loss and Thorne being taken down in the backfield. That's one thing that concerns me about Peyton. As skilled as he's supposed to be, he can't read the defenses. He has trouble throwing correct passes.
And well, Spectre, we were just talking about that very play.
Yeah,
before
that's,
we went to commercial
interesting.
In the previous segment.
Okay, and I should have let off with
okay,
you.
Okay, cool. No,
that's fine.
So my hypothesis on that specific play, and it's not to excuse how Peyton played against A&M, I'm thinking if you watch the Auburn offense after the ball is snapped, I'm thinking Auburn is faking a screen to the running back, and Peyton Thorne is supposed to go quarterback draw up the middle after Auburn fakes a screen. So I'm thinking Peyton Thorne looks at the blitzer and decides, I can make it up the middle before the outside blitzer gets there, and that's why Auburn doesn't change anything on that specific play. Because, yeah, if it's a passing play, it seems to have no chance with a free blitzer coming in. But if it's a quarterback draw up the middle, and the offensive line seems to react like it's a quarterback draw as well, maybe Peyton Thorne thinks that he can get there in time on that play, even though it turns out he can't get there. You know, he couldn't get there on time, and the A&M defender stops him. But I think... Yeah, we got an answer from Hugh Freeze today that Peyton Thorne has the authority to change plays at the line of scrimmage and audible if he doesn't like what he's seeing from the defense. But I think there's maybe an explanation why nothing changed on that play where two different Auburn players point out the blitzer.
One other thing. I've been waiting for someone to bring this up. Who's the guest today?
Jason Caldwell.
Hey, Jason.
Hey.
You know, during the game, Peyton threw a backward pass. I think it was to Hunter. I'm not sure. But I think it was batted or something like that, but he went up to catch the ball and batted it down to the ground.
Yes.
And him being a skilled quarterback, as he's said to be, wouldn't he have known that was a backward pass?
No, I mean, it was so close that he probably would not have realized in the heat of the moment that it was. All he knows is he's throwing a pass, it gets batted up, and the first thing you're taught is to knock the ball down.
It was tipped back to him, right?
Yeah. And so it wasn't like it was straight backwards. It was pretty close. It was one of those things where they said the call stands. So it was one of those where it was an inch or two either way. If you're watching it 2 minutes later, you probably say, yeah, I probably should have just caught that ball and done it. But in the heat of the moment, you're saying, I just got to get this ball on the ground so another guy can't catch it. And so it's hard. That's a tough one right there because it happened so quickly that all he's thinking is, I threw a pass, I got to get it on the ground.
Yeah, you're probably right. I give him the benefit of the doubt on that. Well, moving on to the Georgia game, I was talking to Jacob today, and Rob has got the SEC experience behind him, and I think his first game last year was against Missouri. Is that correct?
He may have. Did he come in the Missouri game? Maybe. I can't remember. I don't remember what game before it's the first start he got, but I know he played in that game, and Holden played a little bit in that game too, I think. So, but he's had some SEC games under his belt for sure.
Yeah, well, my point was that was his first game against an SEC team, and I think he threw over 130 yards in passing and like 50 yards in rushing. And he went on, and we won that game, but we lost the next game to LSU. But my goodness, he threw over 300 yards in that game, and I think with two touchdowns. And then we went on to play Georgia the next week, and of course lost that game. But again, he had over 160 yards passing and two TDs. 50 yards rushing.
Yeah, I think there's and we appreciate the phone call, Spectre. We only got a couple more minutes with Jason, but that's I think there's a chance that we see more Robbie if Peyton Thorne falters on Saturday. It feels like Peyton Thorne will go in with the shortest leash.
It feels like they've said, hey, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this,
and then we'll see.
And then we'll see what happens. Yes, Robbie. I mean, Robbie played okay last year, but he's 13 of 38 passing. Now, some of that. His issue, some of that Georgia's defense, some of that every Auburn quarterback who's played in Athens since about 2005 has had the same numbers.
You're not kidding.
I think we'll see Robbie in situations no matter what. And I think we're going to see him throw the ball because I'm telling you, Saturday, I thought he threw the best balls of any of the three quarterbacks, including Holden.
Yeah, you're right. Holden.
Holden stood in the pocket and was poised.
He did.
Poised,
he was poised,
but
he
wasn't
didn't,
really accurate.
Yeah, his passes
were
what you
I thought Robbie's throws
expect.
Were better than anybody else's on the field on Saturday.
And I'm willing, in the case of Peyton Thorne, I'm willing to chalk it up to a couple of bad games, and maybe he's better than what he's shown in the two Power 5 games so far this season.
And I know this. Watching him in pregame Saturday throwing the ball, I'm like, and this guy's just ripping the ball. He's throwing it really well. And like I said, he looks sped up. Can you slow down? That's mm-hmm. it. Can you slow down? Hey, and we'll know pretty early.
You're right. I mean, this is not this team's not very talented, so you won't know. You're gonna know.
It won't take long. If you stand in there and deliver the ball and do those things. Here's the other part of it. Just even if your pressure's coming, don't ball up. Run, mm-hmm. go somewhere, I'm just going to kind of shelter a little bit. We got to find something.
The lack of a single throwaway this year is a little bit surprising too, because that yardage adds up. RG3 was talking about there during the television broadcast.
It does. Outside the pocket, throw the ball away.
Yeah, I mean, because when you there's a
especially on early downs,
the difference between second and 14 and second and 10 is huge
because you can still run it on second 10.
Yeah, and that's where a sack on first down is often a drive killer.
That's where if it's not there, get outside the pocket. And if nobody comes back to the ball, sail it out of bounds, throw it away.
Throw it at the running back's feet.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a firm believer of throwing it at the closest eligible guy's feet.
You're right. There was not one ball thrown away Saturday. And to have that many sacks, some of those were really quick. But some of those were, I am holding the ball a little too long. Yeah, there are lots of things to fix. This is not the best opponent to do that against. But I still think there are plays to be made, and there were plays to be made Saturday. Just got to make a few of them.
And you got them at home. I mean, this is a huge recruiting weekend. You want the atmosphere. That's something you're bringing them all in because you want them to feel this atmosphere and
go out and compete. If you don't win it, hey, it'd be great if you do. Go out and compete and say, hey, we were there for four quarters. That's the thing you want to show up. you know, the question is, you know, what do you have defensively? I mean, saw Donovan Kaufman. We've seen Zion Puckett. Can you get any of those other guys back, and can you stay healthy? Because Saturday was a physical football game. This Saturday is going to be a physical football game. Can the defense hold up? And fortunately for them so far, the front has stayed relatively healthy. So that's been good news. Mm-hmm. Hey, Cam Riley continues to come on.
Give him, two sacks in two straight games, right?
Give him a couple more of those blitz opportunities to take some of the pressure off Larry Nixon and Eugene Asante. Because Carson Beck, they're going to stand in the pocket. They're going to throw it. You know, can you find a way to slow down, you know, the best tight end in the country?
Cam Riley, I believe, won his first 32 Auburn
without
games.
Without a sack.
He's got sacks in two straight games.
Yep, so give him more of those opportunities.
The longer the game's close, feels like more Georgia's going to get.
Possibility
of rattling Georgia's there.
Yeah.
Jason, know you got to run. Let everybody know just some of the things they can be looking forward to and how they can find it all and keep up with you.
Yeah, you're right. Got tons of things going on. You can check us out at auburnundercover.com. You're right. Game previews, got basketball, had video from Bruce Pearl yesterday, had a photo gallery from basketball as well. But lots of talk now heading into Georgia, lots of recruiting stuff.
Not just football.
You know, Christian had a running list of the football visitors. I had basketball guys today. Couple of five-star guys coming in, four-star prospect, couple of
unofficial
visit. Baseball has a top 100 player coming in for a visit this weekend and a talented 2025 pitcher. So there'll be other sports that have folks on campus, mm-hmm. too. So this is kind of the weekend everybody's been pointing to, and see if Auburn can go out and back it up. So find us there at auburnundercover.com and follow me on Twitter at ITATJason.
Jason, thanks a lot, man. Always love having you here in the studio. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
At Dixie Electric
and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Just a couple of minutes left here in hour number one. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, the 247 Network, joining us here as he does most Wednesdays. Yeah, busy time, and it will be crazy this weekend. There's so many recruits for so many sports coming in. But yeah, you can keep up with all that there at auburnundercover.com. You can check that out and keep up with all the players that are coming in. All right, I'm looking through. It's funny, we were talking about this, and I just started looking back at the play-by-play, and I didn't realize how effective Auburn was at throwing on first down. In the first half, Auburn must have had five passes called on first down. Peyton Thorne was four for four and was sacked once.
The first one was a sack, right? And then I think
last one was a sack.
Well, I've got Peyton Thorne losing 2 yards on a run on the first play.
On
of the
a
game.
Run.
Was that a run, not a sack? Yeah. I thought that was a
No, I don't think that was a sack.
Maybe
I
that was a design run. Okay. So Auburn ran Peyton Thorne on first down on the first play of the game.
Yeah, remember we looked like we were going to try to do some of the things that he did against Samford.
And then the next four times they called a passing play on first down.
He completed
the
them half, all.
Yeah, he completed all four of them. Auburn, second and third down hiccups.
And penalties.
Including penalties.
Yeah, just but Auburn, again, had too many of those second and long, third and long. I mean, third and long especially. It just seemed like for the, you know, all season, it's been third and way too many.
Yeah, and it was a team that when they fell behind on early downs, right, it seemed like things spiraled and got worse. But no, when Peyton Thorne was entrusted to throw the ball on first down, I think maybe some of that is A&M expecting an Auburn run. Yeah, I mean
and the quarterback having a little more time.
If the strength of the team is in the run game, the defense might assume that, and Auburn was able to take advantage of you know, catching the defense off guard. But yeah, we'll see if that continues on Saturday. But no, when things started to go south, there wasn't much. I mean, Peyton Thorne had 6 completions in the game.
Yeah, and 4 of those came on first down in the first half.
First down in the first half. It's a good news, bad news situation.
Yeah. All right. We're halfway done. About to get to our top of the hour break. Don't forget, got our Tiger Talk segment coming up as Jacob was able to spend some time with Eugene Asante. That'll be coming up at the bottom of the hour. But until then, phone lines are wide open. Come on in and join us as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, the regular crew here for hour number two. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell, spending most of hour number one with us, as he does on Wednesdays. Hopefully you got a chance to hear that. If you missed any of it, please check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com. And use the podcast center. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And we're here for hour number two, which will include Tiger Takes coming up at the bottom of the hour once again. With Auburn practicing, we're unable to have any players on with us live during the show. So Jacob Goins, host, of course, of on the line, is able to talk with Eugene Asante. It had been, remember, Keontae Scott. But then he was injured. So, Eugene.
If something happens to Eugene, I will start
then,
to
then they're going
to
go, hey, they're going to say, wait, nobody else for you guys.
Drew,
Eugene, outstanding last week and looking forward to hearing his conversation with Jacob at the bottom of the hour.
Bill, are you familiar with the Madden curse? Have you ever heard of this before? The Madden curse?
Yes, I have.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it had something that had crossed in. How active is that these days? Is there still a belief? That guys, because it was remarkable.
Oh, it was
for a while.
Well, it was sort of before that. There was the Sports Illustrated jinx.
Mahomes. Yeah, but there was a remarkable stretch of guys having bad luck, especially NFL players having bad luck immediately following being on the cover of the Madden football game.
Oh yeah, and years ago, it was Sports Illustrated.
I will, guys.
It was crazy how it with the Sports Illustrated when it was be like. Within a week, those guys, something would happen bad.
I was telling Drew, and actually this was a moment last week we thought maybe the mics were on, but I was telling Drew after the show last week that my lone superstition in sports, like the one thing as a fan, the one thing I do not like, I guess it's playoff hockey style, I do not like to cut my hair or shave during my team's win streak. Like if they're on a very hot streak, if they're on a really, and I've disregarded this before, Bill, and immediately experienced disaster with my teams. Like, I've been it'll be fine, whatever. So I feel like this is a week where maybe I was thinking about getting a haircut last week, and I was like, well, Auburn is 3-0, and they're
you can get one now.
Yeah, you can
get one. No, mine is, and again, we can spend whole shows doing this. Mine is, do not call me.
Oh yeah,
and talk to me about how well our team is doing,
or how bad
while the game is going,
or how badly
you can call me after, and that's fine.
See, I think what I think you've experienced more, what I know of is people call you gloating because a rival looks bad. Oh, look at the bad.
Oh yeah,
start.
Yeah, that's right. But it's almost any in game.
Sure.
Nah, or
wait until the game
it
is
ain't
final.
Over yet.
Wait until it's over. Or at the very least with a pitcher, wait until they're out of the game.
Oh yeah.
And then talk about it. Don't tell me, hey, six innings.
Oh man,
innings,
he's got something going.
Six innings and then watch what happens in the seventh inning.
Yeah, that's right.
When he goes back
out. It is like the no jinx. You're right. All right. 334-321-1390. That is the number to get you through. You can call us or you can text us.
Yeah, 334-564-1840 is the number for the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Bill, how you feeling about Saturday?
I think that Vegas has some feeling that this game is not going to be as one-sided as some people think.
Well, I mean,
I feel like this one, if Auburn doesn't let it get out of hand early, I think it could be pretty darn competitive.
Total in the 40s with a 15.5-point spread suggests Vegas is thinking like 31-16, something in that ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
That is a game that could be close in the fourth quarter. and Georgia scores a touchdown to make it a two-score game. Like, that's where if Auburn can get into that.
Or it's or they could be thinking it's 31-10, and Auburn scores a gets a late score.
It could be 31-3 becomes 31-10, you know, or something like that. No, you're right, but this is a.
I think that we'll see. It's Carson Beck's first road start. It's Georgia's first road game. I mean, now this is a team that has a ton of talent, and they have a lot of talent that has played a lot of minutes.
I think there's a ton of pressure, and it flies in the face of everything we've been talking about these last couple of days. I think there is a ton of pressure on the Auburn defense in the first couple of series of this game, because if Auburn can't stop Georgia early, I mean, look, maybe the Auburn offense is going to have breakthroughs this week and Auburn's going to be able to move the football with a lot of success. Auburn was just held to 200 yards against Texas A&M.
They were.
If Georgia is producing points early.
Oh, Auburn's in big, big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I think there's going to be pressure on the Auburn defense throughout the game to keep this thing close and keep it competitive, but especially early. Auburn can't, I mean, if it's 7, you know, if it's 10 or 14 early, like, that's where you've taken the fans out of it. The bad feelings about the difference between the offense, the defense, and things like that, the things could boil over. And it could be a particularly bad day for the Auburn side if that were to happen.
Going to be really interesting to see how Mike Bobo handles Carson Beck's first road start, because they have to think. I mean, he has to think. Hey, Auburn's going to try to stop the running game, and Georgia has not, you know, just been able to line up and just plow through people this year the way they have the last couple of years. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if Georgia decides to take a couple of shots, you know, try to beat Auburn over the top and really take them out early.
Former Auburn offensive coordinator.
That is
Mike
right.
Bobo. Former Auburn defensive coordinator, Will Muschamp.
Right.
They're leading the Georgia defense, paraformer. I believe Georgia also, I would guess, without this information in front of me, Bill, and it's not the only reason they're succeeding, but I think it probably does, it's a feather in the cap for them. They've got to be the only Power 5 team these days with alumni as head coach, offensive coordinator, and defensive coordinator, right? Like, how many people are doing that?
Not only that, there are alums who have been head coaches, both on both.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah,
I mean, alumni would be really.
But how about that?
You're right, but there are alumni who they're not just coaching there because it's their alma mater.
No,
you know,
and it's not like they've been. And they have been successful assistant coaches, but they've been head coaches too.
And there are other good coaches on the Georgia staff.
Yes, there are.
Del McGee's name comes up, you know, often on the recruiting trail and the work he's done, sending multiple Georgia running backs to the league. So I mean, yeah, they're a dangerous group there that Kirby Smart has assembled.
But I just feel like if Auburn doesn't let it get out of hand right off the bat, that it could be a game that could keep that atmosphere pretty juicy.
I'll tell you what, early Auburn points suddenly put Georgia on the. I mean, early Auburn points, because you think about games, Bill, and I'd say Iron Bowls come to mind, because that's the situation, if you think about the last 20 years or so, most frequently where it's an Auburn team that's not in the top 25 and they're weathering a storm. And it's an Alabama team I guess LSU's been in this position too, where they're a top three, top five, maybe even number one team. The longer the game's close, and especially if the Auburn offense, I mean, think about what the 21 Iron Bowl would be, and would be an example of a game like that. I mean, there have been, I think Nathan, in that guessing game we played with Spectre last hour, naming all the recent Nathan King articles on Auburn Undercover, Nathan did one where, I believe it's he listed the five times in the 2000s. Have you seen this article, Bill?
No, I don't think I have.
Okay, so this will be a fun trivia game. The five times in the 2000s that Auburn has won as a 10-plus point underdog. They've won the game outright.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Happened five times since the start of the 2000 season, and I was wondering if any of those come to mind. off the top of your head? What do you think the biggest Auburn upsets of the last 22, 23 years or so? Because Auburn is a 15.5-point underdog against UGA. There have been, I'll tell you this, there have been two instances where Auburn was an underdog by more than they are an underdog on Saturday, and they won the game outright.
My first thought would be probably not on the road.
They did do it on the road once. The 07 Florida game against Tim Tebow.
Oh, okay.
That was when Florida was the number four team in the country. Auburn was unranked in that game, and Auburn beat them 20-17. Auburn was a 17.5-point underdog in the Swamp, won that game outright. That was number two on Nathan's list. Biggest upset, October 2001, Auburn beats number one Florida 23-20. Auburn was a 26.5-point underdog in the game they won against Florida 23-20. Auburn.
Yeah, Auburn's done that to Florida a couple of times. So
Auburn A&M, I believe the last time Auburn won as a double-digit underdog, the last time they won outright was October 2013 when they beat Texas A&M 45-41. That game was on the road as well in College Station.
That's true, the Manziel, yeah.
A&M was a 13-point favorite in that game. And then I think the other two are Tuberville upsets. Auburn was a... again, Nathan King compiled all this, so I'm cribbing from his story. But Auburn was an 11-point underdog to Alabama in the 2002 Iron Bowl, won that game 17-7. And Auburn was a...
Yeah, Trey Smith.
I think there's another one in there, too. Maybe there's just four. Maybe one of them got trimmed off. But those are the... I think there was... Yeah, there was one I think that he removed earlier, but there have been just a couple of games where Auburn was a where Auburn has been an underdog of 10 or more points and they've won it outright, but it has happened and they've been able to. And I think the 13 Iron Bowl was close to 10 as well. I believe Alabama was 9.5, and maybe you could find it at 10 at some places by kickoff, but. That would be another example, and if you could find that game at 10, that would be more recent than the Manziel upset in 13. But you got to go back.
So it's been 10 years.
Yeah, since Auburn has been a double digit underdog in a game at kickoff and won that game outright. Yeah, it's been about a decade.
Wow. So they're due, is what you're saying.
They're due.
Yeah. Again, don't forget, we've got Tiger Takes coming up at the bottom of the hour. Phone lines are open right now. Hour number two of the drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive.
At ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. Yeah, we were talking. All right, so go ahead and toss that up. We can get folks' thoughts on this. Where'd the deferring questions
I had someone in the text box who was adamant that that Auburn should want the ball to begin the game.
Well, a lot of it depends on what are you more confident in with your team. If you're not confident in your offense, then it's tough to say, well, we want the ball so that we can give you good field position on your first possession.
It feels like, and there have been some studies to sort of back this up, that we're seeing in the last few years, we've seen a drastic increase in the number of people who, when they win the toss, want the ball to start the second half. Deferrals have skyrocketed.
I've always thought that there were more deferrals than there were taking the ball, unless you really feel good about your offense or you really feel bad about your defense.
Right, and someone noted that in the NFL it went from closer to 50-50 to now like a lot more than 50-50 in the last 10-15 years.
In overtime in the NFL, you want the ball because you don't want the other team to have a chance. You hope you can score, and that's it.
And we've seen an added emphasis on the middle eight in basketball, and in football, it's last five of the first half.
Right.
First five.
Well,
of the second
you hear
half.
Coaches say the same thing. The last, I mean, they'll depends on, you know, 2, 4, 5, whatever minutes of the first half and the first of the second half.
And one of the advantages of getting the ball to start the second half in that situation is that if you score to end the first half, you don't have a resulting
possession.
That's right.
There's
no
possession for the other team, and you might be able to get back-to-back scores.
You might be able to steal a possession.
Right.
And I think that's the wisdom behind the hope that you can do that and take advantage, you know, really. Because, you know, Cal could have done that had they not. I mean, you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Cal had the opportunity to put two touchdowns on the board, and the Auburn game would have been a very different football game if Cal had been able to end the first half with a touchdown, start the second half with a touchdown. I think that's what coaches are hoping for when they choose a deferral. You know,
and the other thing to keep in mind, and it hasn't been a factor here, but weather is always big. I mean, of course, I'll go back to the 83 Iron Bowl where Alabama – let's see. Auburn had the ball to start the second half, and Alabama was expecting to have the wind in the fourth quarter, and that storm came up, and Auburn had a strong wind at their back in the third and the fourth. But if wind or weather can be a factor, you want that in your favor in the fourth quarter.
And I would say taking the stealing a possession and, you know, hoping to double up math out of it. I could see the advantage of wanting Georgia to have the ball to start the game and putting a little bit of pressure on that Georgia offense.
That's right.
To say, hey, you know what? You're on the road, freshman quarterback who's never played a conference road game before. Like, let's see what you can do against a pretty good Auburn defense.
Sure, and I hope that you can turn that into good field position for your offense for their first possession of the game.
Because I would say, as tempting as like, if maybe you think the perfect start to this game is Auburn gets the ball, goes down the field, and scores.
Oh, that would be great, but I don't think that I would expect that to happen. Because a lot of times, I mean, if you're, you know, you've seen Lane Kiffin in the past, he didn't do it Saturday, but you've seen him in the past be so confident in his offense that he knows he's going to score on that first possession. You don't get that feeling right now from the Auburn
and
offense.
And that would be, you know, that'd be a great start. I wonder if an Auburn stop or even an Auburn turnover of the Georgia offense.
Oh, God, a stop. Just a stop and get the ball. The crowd would still be going crazy.
Yeah. The offense getting the ball, you know, and performing well early would be great, too. But, I think I'd be a little bit surprised to see Auburn want the ball if they win the toss.
I'd be really surprised. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone. And Tommy is up next. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Pretty good.
Hey, just changed subject a little bit. Did y'all get a chance to watch Mighty the other night?
I did, as a matter of fact.
I'm DVRing it for tomorrow night. There is, by the way, I'm glad you brought it up, Tommy, and I'm going to let you finish your point. There will be, if you did not see the screening of it yesterday.
On Monday.
There is.
Or Tuesday, when it was.
I believe tomorrow
Monday.
Night.
Yeah, it was Monday.
Thursday night, there is a scheduled screening on APT. If you have. I use YouTube TV. You can DVR it right now. If you have a streaming service or something, you can get them to record that. But, yeah, if you did not catch it.
Yeah, 8 o'clock, by the way, on Thursday.
Thursday night we'll have it on.
But, no, Tommy, what did you think? I really was impressed. It was funny. I mean, every Wednesday I'm on with Wimp and Barry Sanderson up in Tuscaloosa. And, of course, Wimp very close to Jimmy Rain as well and was talking about having Jimmy on tomorrow. And I said – to make sure that he knows that, you know, I feel like it was a great job of showing Pat Dye the man, not just the coach. I thought it was very, very well done.
Well, I thought it was fantastic. As a matter of fact, I've watched it twice. But, yeah, and they had some really good people talking about, you know, Fran Tarkington, how close they were, and Wimp, and, of course, Bo and Charles Barkley, but I thought it was excellent. Just wanted to get y'all's thoughts on it.
No, I agree. I would strongly encourage. And, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it was running on Alabama. It was running on Alabama Public Television and Georgia Public Broadcasting. And it's going to run on both of those. And, yeah, I think that anyone would you know, really enjoy that, whether, you know, you don't have to be a football fan. But I mean, I think it's a great story, well told.
Yep. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Tommy. 334-321-1390. That is the number to get you through. We'd love your thoughts. What are your feelings? Well, I don't know if I should have put it that way. Your feelings about this game is probably they're not mild feelings about this game. We've talked about that one a little bit, and it was funny that Coach Freeze, you know, was sort of corrected that, oh, it's not as friendly a rivalry as it might have been. But the players, hopefully, I mean, they're going to get out there and compete. I'm looking forward to just seeing what kind of atmosphere we've got for all the, you know, for all the participants, for the fans, for the players, for the recruits, for everybody.
This is still, you know, I was just telling you, there's a local business that's, you know, advertising how you park if you want to go there this weekend, because I think there are places expecting blockbuster. Well,
I think everybody's figuring, get there early, yeah, wherever you're going.
I think a lot of businesses here in the Auburn-Opelika area expecting blockbuster business this weekend, because Georgia brings as many people, not just the Auburn fans, but the Georgia fans who come as well and make this trip, and everyone who comes for the happening. So yeah, I would expect a traditionally busy weekend here for Auburn, Georgia. And amid everything that's changing, I talked to someone last week who was unaware, an Ole Miss fan, who was unaware that Ole Miss Alabama wasn't on the 2024 schedule. And so while all these things are changing next year in college football, Auburn, Georgia
is going to stay there. Well, they made sure that they kept the biggest rivalries for next year, now, Alabama, Tennessee, Auburn, Georgia.
Now, if the SEC goes to 1-7 moving
they
forward,
can't, they just can't do that.
There were too many rivalries would go by the way.
Oh, yes.
Now look, 1-7 with two Power 5 games at a conference.
If everyone
in the league was doing 1-7 with two Power 5 out of conference games, I think I could roll with the punches, even if it meant Auburn, Georgia stops being a yearly thing. But I don't think the SEC is going to do
that. I don't either.
I don't think so. I think 3-6 or 3-5 is more likely. Some of that depends on whether or not, you know, they get the streaming rights they want. But yeah, I think that's doesn't seem like the Auburn, Georgia game is going to. It's a question I asked Kirby back at Media Days, was, you know, sort of, does he have strong feelings about the Auburn, Georgia game continuing amid all the changes we're seeing to the SEC schedule, and he was, yeah, he knew how many times it had been played. He knew how many people have worked at both schools. He cited Pat Dye and Vince Dooley and the, you know, the tradition between those two places. So yeah, I think there's a lot of sentiment for that game to keep going.
Yeah, and of course it will. We know for a couple of more years. So man, the thing is, Auburn just needs to find a way to get closer to the level that Georgia is at. I mean, that's what Hugh Freeze was talking about, calling them the gold standard. And they have dominated this series this century.
Georgia has, yeah. Yes. I mean, Auburn hasn't won in Athens since 05. Auburn hasn't won in the series since 17. Georgia has, they've won two national championships, played for a third since Auburn. I mean, think about that, Bill. Since the last time Auburn beat Georgia, Georgia's been to the national championship game three times.
Yeah, well, including that year.
Including later.
That year, the year that Auburn, the last time yes. Auburn beat them, they played for the national
including
title.
Including later that season. Yeah. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Right after Auburn beat Georgia and Alabama.
I mean, we think about the run that Nick Saban is on at Alabama and the way it started. And we say it's once in a generation. You're never going to see anything like
well,
this again.
Well, you've never seen Alabama win three straight.
Yeah. But you know
under
what
Nick
else?
Saban.
But
Kirby's got a chance.
Yes. And Alabama, that incredible run started with Nick Saban going, I don't want to get the numbers wrong. Did he go 84-16? Because they were showing it this, I think he was 84-16 in his first 100.
And may have been, but remember it was 7-6 in his first
right,
13.
But Kirby
6-6 in his first 12.
Well, what did
12.
Kirby do? Kirby didn't do all that well in his first year, didn't he?
Kirby was 8-5.
Yeah, and so I mean, but I think Kirby is one game better in his first 100.
And that's because his first year he was 8-5.
One game better in his first 100 at Georgia than Nick Saban was at Alabama.
Well,
did you ever think you would see someone start an SEC career with a better first 100 games.
No, but if it was going to happen, it would be either Georgia or Florida because they've been in the East and their competition isn't as tough, but it is phenomenal. It is just unbelievable.
And it's the other team Georgia and it's the other team Auburn plays every
year. It's the other rival. It's the other big rival that Auburn has. Yeah, no question. All right, we're approaching the bottom of the hour. Need to go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. When we come back, Jacob Goins, spend some time with Eugene Asante. Tiger Takes, coming up here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Time now for our weekly Tiger Take segment brought to you by the Alsobrook Law Group. When you need legal assistance, call Zach. He's got your back. Or find him on the web at alsolaw.com. And once again, Jacob Goins had the opportunity to sit down with Auburn linebacker Eugene Asante.
Jacob Goins with you here on ESPN 106.7, joined by Auburn linebacker Eugene Asante, as he does every single week with us here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7 for Tiger Takes. Eugene, hope you're doing well, man. I know it's another week in the SEC. It's a grind each and every week in this conference in college football. And coming off of a tough loss last week on the road at Texas A&M, what are your thoughts about what happened there at College Station?
Yeah, I think there's, obviously everyone wants to go out there and put their best foot forward and get a W. But I do think there's some things that we can look upon and reflect upon and just, take it with a grain of salt and just, put our best foot forward this week coming up. So I think there's some things we can unsafe that we can improve upon. It's positive, it's reassuring that, those mistakes are correctable, it's just a growing process. We want to be the best team moving forward. So we understand we have to continue to play. We need to play up to the standard every Saturday or we're going to get beat. So, that's the biggest thing I took away from the game. And I just want the guys to know that we have to improve upon stuff and take it with a growth mindset and put our best foot forward this week.
Well, the final score was 27-10. From the defensive perspective, obviously, the side of the ball that you are all over the place on, you guys really played extremely well. And those last two touchdowns, I think, for A&M was when you guys had some backups in there. We know you guys are still dealing with some injuries. We'll talk about that coming up in just a few minutes. But overall, what was the defensive game plan going into that game for a team that likes to throw the football? They had a talented quarterback and some talented receivers. What was the game plan going in on Saturday?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was just establishing our will upon our side of the ball, stopping football. That's what we want to do every week. That's the biggest thing, not allowing our opponents to run the football on us. I think we did a good job at times bottling up the run. And I think we put the quarterback in situations. We wanted to put the quarterback in situations on third down with different pressures, different looks, just to, give him a different viewpoint, different perspective out there and just fluster him a little bit. So I think that was the main game plan going into Texas A&M. And like I said, there's a lot to improve upon. And we're moving forward and making those changes as of right now. So definitely reflecting on the game and trying to put our best foot forward for Georgia.
It's got to be tough, right, when you prepare for a really talented quarterback like Connor Wegman, who then unfortunately gets hurt. And I don't know if you saw the news. As of today, he is expected to be out for the year, unfortunately, with that foot injury. But how tough is it for you and for the defense to prepare for a guy all week long? He goes out, and then you have to prepare in pretty much on the fly for the backup quarterback who came in and looked pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a different, different style of play. Just, we try to, make sure we prepare for both quarterbacks throughout the week. But, we knew Connor was a guy. So we were, we were preparing for him. And then he went down and, Max came in and did a really good job. Played at LSU before and I'm familiar with his game. He's, he can spin out the pocket and make some things happen with his legs. So he came in and did a really good job for them. And
I just changed the game a little bit. So we definitely prepared, you know, for both quarterbacks, but, you know, Max came in there and did a good thing. So just, you know, trying to improve upon that, being able to grow and understand that, you know, situations occur in the game that we have to, you know, be ready and prepared for.
Eugene, you led the defense once again with 9 total tackles. 7 of those were solo. I mean, you're playing on a different level right now defensively. What's helping you, whether it be your preparation in the week or if it's something in the game that's just giving you that edge? I mean, you're playing at a really, really elite level on the defensive side of the football right now. What would you accredit that to so far?
I really do give all the praise to my coaches. They did a really good job in helping me prepare. Coach Ron Roberts, Coach Aldridge do a really good job in just allowing us to understand tendencies and what to look for out there and to just allow us to play fast and freely. So I think that's the biggest thing, just coming into it, you know, getting with the coaches, trying to understand our opponent to its entirety. And I can really attest that to the coaches and help them working in and day in and out with me, helping me try and improve. So I thank them so much for that.
Of the 10 points that Auburn scored on Saturday, you were the lone touchdown man, and you know I was going to bring it up and got to talk about it. It was a heck of a play all around defensively. You got your paws on the football when you were taken off down the sideline. I've got to ask, man, did you see Jimbo? I mean, did you see him standing on the field? And what's going through your mind when you're running down the sideline and the opposing head coach is right there in your way?
Yeah, I definitely saw a coach. I wasn't able to identify if it was Coach Fisher or not. It all happened really fast, you know. So I got the ball, I'm running, and I'm like, yo, there's a person on the field that's not wearing a uniform. And I was a little confused. I'm like, man. And it kind of was a surreal moment because, you know, I'm running, I'm trying to go score a touchdown, and it's like, it didn't even feel real because it's just like, oh, why is there a coach on the field? So I crossed the line, and I knew there was a flag thrown on the play, so I was like, oh, man, it might have been called back. But, you know, just a really fun moment, you know, first college touchdown, just to experience that. But it was definitely interesting seeing Coach Fitcher on the field.
Yeah, and I wanted to go that direction as well because it's got to be a big moment for you. Anytime the defense can score a touchdown, it's always a really big moment, and it really just another testament to what you've been doing so far. And that almost gave the team a little bit more life. It kept them in the ball game there a little bit. And so what does it mean for you to just, again, make such a big play like that for your team?
It means a lot, you know. Just needing a spark, you know, with the defense trying to create something. You know, it's a team, you know, regardless of what goes throughout the game, it's a team sport. You know, we try to always pride ourselves on taking care of our brother, you know. So, you know, it was a big thing. I just wanted to get the guys going, and I'm glad it happened the way it happened. And then, you know, just trying to rally around that play and, you know, the juice, you know, just uplifting our team and bringing more juice to the sideline. So that was the biggest thing I took away from it, just trying to draw draw inspiration from that moment and then build upon it and put our best foot forward from there on out.
You can be honest with me, man. Did anything cross your mind when you're running past a coach? I know you didn't know it was him, but any chance that you just hit him a little Heisman right there and you know, a little stiff arm on the way by just to make sure that nobody was going to stop you on the way?
Yeah, so, you know, people have been asking me this one. I was like, they're like, man, you think you could have got a quick stiff arm in? And I'm like, man, you know, I think I was just so tied into the moment of, you know, just trying to get our team points, get our team on the board, because I knew nobody was catching me from behind. But, you know, at that moment, it was just so – it was like milliseconds.
Right.
I was seeing them. Maybe sitting here now, I would have threw a stiff arm or – you know, changed my angle so I would have, you know, ran him over or something. But, you know, you know, reflecting on that, I think I made a good decision.
No, I think you made the right decision, man. You just took off for the end zone, and you're right. Nobody was going to stop you from behind. And I know it's all happening so fast in an environment like that and in a situation like that. You made the right play, and again, you kept your team in the football game. We're talking with Auburn linebacker Eugene Asante here on ESPN 106.7. It was a tough loss. Offensively, obviously, just it was a struggle really all afternoon long, and it kind of goes back to the Cal game, and it really rolls into this game as well, where the offense seems to be, you know, getting off to a slower start and struggling to get a lot of momentum, and the defense continuing to go back on the field. We've talked about it before, Eugene, the communication and the relationship that the offense and defense has, where you guys just say, look, we got you. Go out there, do your thing, and we're going to do whatever we can to keep you in the football game. And I think you guys did a really good job of that again on Saturday.
Yeah, just trying to reiterate to our guys that, you know, regardless of what the situation, we have their back. That's the biggest thing. Just being in a team sport, we want to establish that we're brothers and we're all trying to take care of each other. So, it was similar to the Cal game in that sense. But, you know, like we said, we always want to put our best foot forward defensively, regardless of the situation, and always help our brothers out. So, unfortunately, we didn't get the results, but, you know, we're working towards this week for Georgia.
Well, let's talk about that Georgia game coming up this Saturday, 2:30 over at Jordan-Hare Stadium. I know it's going to be nice to get back home, playing in front of what is going to be a loud and a rambunctious crowd. Over 80,000 people will be there on Saturday to watch Auburn take on Georgia. And we know there's been a lot of conversation early this week about the rivalry between Auburn and Georgia. And I know you transferring in, and you weren't a part of this last year. So for your first true experience of Auburn and Georgia, what have you learned so far about this rivalry, and what are you looking forward to on Saturday just playing Georgia?
I learned there's a lot of rich tradition, rich history in terms of, you know, the ball being tipped up in the air, caught in the end zone against Georgia. There's a lot of things, a lot of spectacular moments that built this school and this foundation within the football program that, you know, are incredible moments for, you know, Auburn. You know, just learning about the history, the tradition was the biggest thing for me. Learning about the South's oldest rivalry. So it's like, you know, I take pride in that, you know, trying to put our best foot forward for Auburn. You know, wearing the AU proudly and just, you know, putting our best foot forward, playing the number one team in the country. So it's a great challenge. You know, we don't back down. We don't surrender. We're out there to try to put our best foot forward, and we're, you know, grateful to do it against a quality opponent, and we're excited to see what happens on Saturday.
Yeah, well, they are definitely a quality opponent. You already mentioned they're the number one team in the country, 4-0 so far this season. As you guys have been watching film and preparing for that Georgia offense, what is it that has stuck out to you guys, and what is it that you guys are preparing for against this Georgia offense on Saturday?
I think they do a lot of good things in terms of schematics. I think they have a quality run game. I think they have a great O-line, guys that fire off the ball and are, you know, aggressive in the run game. I think they also have a great quarterback in Carson Beck, stepping in for Stetson Bennett. He does a really good job getting his receivers the ball, pushing the ball downfield, and managing the game. So those are all challenges, all people that, you know, we look forward to playing and going out there and showing what we can do. So just trying to, you know, minimize them in every single way we can, and you know, stopping the run, establishing our will, and, you know, getting them to third down situations. So that's a big thing for us, and we're excited to do that and take on that challenge.
And then how much of an advantage is it for you guys being at home, being at Jordan-Hare Stadium, rather than having to travel to Athens and take on Georgia there on the road? How big of an advantage is it for you guys playing at home with a crowd that's going to be there and going to be extremely supportive?
It's a big thing. You know, one thing I've said many times about this environment here at Auburn, the fans are electric. You know, they come out and they support. And, you know, that is a big factor in the game. You know, just having fans there that are supporting and cheering. And when their offense is on the field, we're putting them in situations where, you know, they might not be able to hear the snap count or get flustered with crowd noise. It's a big thing. You know, you can literally feel the floor shake. You know, it's an electric environment. So kudos to the fans, and we really do need that support on Saturday, and we're going to go out there and play hard the way we know how to play hard, and excited to take on this Georgia team.
What does Auburn have to do as a collective, offensively, defensively, special teams, the entire squad? What has to happen for Auburn to pull what would be an upset over the number one team in the country, Georgia, in Jordan-Hare Stadium this weekend?
I think we just need to play our brand of football. We need to get back to having fun, you know, playing football. Just, you know, going out there and, you know, putting our best foot forward, but also, you know, just remembering the game that we've played ever since we were kids, you know, not stressing out, not being tight, just letting it rip, you know, playing relentlessly, flowing to the football and, you know, taking our shots in terms of offensively and just all those types of things, you know, having our, just get back into playing our brand of football, having fun and doing what we know we can do. And all those things will ultimately get us the results we desire. And, you know, I think that's really the biggest thing we want to emphasize and preach to the guys is, you know, the guys, it's a game you've been playing your whole life, you know, just going out there and doing what you have done on multiple occasions. And then ultimately, I think that'll get us where we want to be.
And I know before we let you go, I know you guys are dealing with injuries on really both sides of the football, but especially on that defensive side, we know a couple of guys are out for the foreseeable future and just seeing guys go down in the game against Texas A&M, a lot of guys able to come back and play. But how do you guys just rally, whether you're banged up and it's a long SEC schedule, how do you rally around the guys that are healthy and the guys trying to get healthy in a game like this?
You know, we're just preparing those young guys for their moment. You know, injuries is kind of a part of the thing. We don't like to see them happen, but, you know, they're kind of a part of the sport that we play.
Mm-hmm.
So just getting the young guys prepared for their moment, getting them ready to be in situations where they'll be challenged and, you know, just putting that pressure on them in practice so they don't, you know, tense up or freeze up during the game. So those are all things that are important. Just putting yourself in the situations in practice, and just putting your best foot forward on Saturday. So we're trying to do that. We're trying to get the young guys ready. We're trying to, you know, get our healthy injured guys back. And I think that would be the biggest thing in adjusting for this week of Georgia.
Auburn linebacker Eugene Asante joining us on ESPN 106.7 for our weekly segment on Tiger Takes. Auburn taking on Georgia this weekend, 2:30 over in Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Thanks, Jacob. Tiger Takes, proudly presented each Wednesday at 5:30 by the Alsobrook Law Group on the web at alsolaw.com. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon, see if we can squeeze in a call or two on the other side here on The Drive.
Hey, guys, this is Tyler Reynolds with Reynolds.